anti-racist organizing, feminist praxis, and movement-building strategies, and Towards the Other America, anti-racist resources for white people taking action for Black Lives Matter. I'm also nice to say that I think of him as a friend, which is an amazing thing for me. We also have today Dr. Melissa Byrd. She is an amazing activist woman growing up in Utah, education there, and then we were blessed that she came to Southern California working with Planned Parenthood, completing her education here, and is now developed into Byrd Girl Industries as an activist, life coach, career coach, and doing a workshop tomorrow evening, Fanning the Flames. There will be information about that in the social hall afterwards. So if we can join, please rise in body or spirit and join us to sing.
Yes, good morning. My name is Eleanor Nunez, and I'm your music director here at UUCF. Our opening hymn is number 346, Come Sing a Song with Me.
People are opting out of vital conversations about diversity and inclusivity because they fear looking wrong, saying something wrong, or being wrong. Choosing our own comfort level over hard conversations is the epitome of privilege, and it corrodes trust and moves us away from meaningful and lasting change. Brené Brown. At this time, I'd like to invite Chris and Melissa forward to light the chalice. As Chris lights the chalice, please join with me in saying the words projected on the screen. This flame affirms the light of truth, the warmth of community, and the fire of commitment. Love is the doctrine that we share. The quest of truth is our sacrament. And service is our prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve human need, thus do we covenant with one another. This month's food collection is pasta. Each Sunday, our children collect food donations to provide for those in need. Due to the length of our program, we are not going to be having our time for all ages today. So we will be excusing the children directly to their religious education.
From you I receive, to you I give, together we share, and from
This is the time for sharing joys and sorrows. You may express your personal triumphs and sorrows. Please come forward if you wish and keep your statements short and concise.
Hi. I just came back from my first vacation where I didn't get pneumonia, which I did in the Philippines. In 4 or 5 years, I went to the East Coast. I went to New York City where my dad was born, where as a child I went during the McCarthy period because that was a place where we were safe as children of U.S. communists. I saw old friends there. I went to Connecticut. I saw a friend who I hadn't seen for 50 years. I spent 4 hours talking. Phenomenal. This guy was president of the Postal Workers Union in Iowa. And 4 years ago, found the love of his life and found out that he was gay. Fantastic guy. And then I went to Massachusetts and spent time with my friend who's wife passed away in January, who had been my friend for almost 50 years. As some of us know, one of the benefits of being old is that you have friendships for many decades. So we drank some good whiskey. I went to Great Barrington to say a few words at the gravesite, homestead of W.E.D. Du Bois, one of my heroes, and to my friend Vivian, who will always live in my heart.
Hey, it's really hard to follow that because that was so heartfelt. And this is super heartfelt too, but I just wanted to say thank you to so many of you who came out to see my silly little show, Drowsy Chaperone. Kathy, Mary, especially you guys, thank you so much. Sarah, everybody who came, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Sorry. I know I've been coming up here a lot lately, but a lot of important stuff has been happening in my life over these past few weeks. I would like to announce that I've gained access to a large database that is full of the addresses of all the concentration camps where the children are being held, and I've gained access to a large database containing the phone numbers of said concentration camps. So if anyone wants to raise hell, I'm not sure how long I'll have access to this database, so if the head of the Social Action Committee wants to talk to me about this, I don't know who it is, but anyway.
And for all the private joys and sorrows as well.
All that you touch, you change. All that you change, changes you. The only lasting truth is change. God is change. Octavia Butler.
Let us be together in a moment of silence. That we give remembrance to those who are in those camps and their circumstances, and that we not ever accept it. Peace be with us and with all under the sun.
Anybody here? seen my old friend Abraham. Can you tell me where he's gone? He freed a lot of people, but they say the good die young. I just looked around, he was gone. Anybody here seen my old friend John? Can you tell me where he's gone? He freed a lot of people. They say the good die young. I just looked around, he was gone. Seen my old friend Martin. Can you tell me where he's gone? He freed a lot of people, but they say the good die young. I just looked around and he was gone. Didn't you love the things they stood for? Didn't they try to find some good for you and me? And we'll be free someday soon. It's gonna be one day as anybody. I saw him walking up over the hill with Abraham, Martin, and John. Thought I saw him walking up over that hill with Abraham, Martin.
One of my favorite songs, and I often wonder these days what those men would think if they could see today. I would like to welcome up Dr. Melissa Bird for our first reading, and she will be sharing some thoughts on it as well.
So, a couple of years ago, I think it was about 2014, 2015, I was in our house in Anaheim, and I was sleeping, and at about 3 o'clock in the morning, 3:30 approximately, I wrote a note on my phone, and the note said this: I believe in a new brand of advocacy where we humble ourselves to our shortcomings and engage in acts of graceful revolution that bring light to the true reality of people's lives. I believe that if we engage people in their own spaces, teach them to look at injustice as moments that touch all of us, if we give people the knowledge of the power structure and the tools to infiltrate its membrane, then change will take place in America. This is the graceful revolution. Y'all, that came to me in the middle of the night. And so when I woke up the next morning and I looked at my phone, the note was still on my phone. And I was like, oh my gosh, that wasn't a dream. This is amazing. And I was hitting my husband, who's sitting right there. And I was like, oh my gosh, Jimmy, you're never gonna believe what I came up with in the middle of the night. This is genius. Holy crap, Paula, it's amazing. I'm gonna spread this word and it's gonna be awesome and everyone's gonna engage in Graceful Revolution. It's gonna be amazing. And he just was kind of looking at me like, whatever. It's early. Why are you so excited? And I sent it to a friend of mine who's on the East Coast, and she said, not yet. And I was like, no, this is awesome. This is amazing. I'm so excited. I wrote this in the middle of the night. This is genius. Who comes up with this in the middle of the night? So good. She's like, not yet. And I was like, ugh. So I let it go. I wrote a blog about it. And then I moved on. We finished my PhD. We moved to Oregon. Things changed. I held on to the Graceful Revolution in my head, though. And then we had the 2016 election. And the very first message from my friend on the East Coast was, now. And I knew what she meant. I didn't even have to ask, right? Like, I was like, oh yes, now. Now's the time for the revolution. But I want to talk to you about a bit about the revolution. Because I think for many, especially now that we're 3 years into this, for many, what we are experiencing is the polarization of America. The shaming, the othering, the way women judge other women for their choices, the way we judge other people for how they're reacting to what's going on in the nation. And I think it's really important for us to remember that each one of us plays a part in the Graceful Revolution, but we don't all have to do it the same way. Every single one of us is motivated by a different thing. A lot of the times when I talk about my work, I talk about reproductive justice because that's my thing. My husband's thing is marine biology and saving the ocean. Every single one of us has something different. As Richard Rohr says, when people on the news say, we want justice, what they normally mean is that bad deeds should be punished with vengeance. That's not justice. That's not grace. It's the polarization and the othering of people who don't behave the way we think they should. It's not love. And so I'm an Episcopal. I'm going to admit it. I'm an Episcopal. And each week we confess our sins in church. And a few months ago, I actually rewrote our confession in my head as I was weeping. And it said this. Sorry, it's on my phone. God of all mercy, we confess that we have sinned against you, opposing your will in our lives. We have stayed stuck in our fear instead of hearing your loving grace that you have placed upon the expansiveness of our hearts. We have denied your goodness in each other. We have forgotten that you are the one who joins us for who judges us for our sins. But the sins aren't what man has said they are. The sins are in denying the gifts that we are born with. The sins are in staying afraid and paralyzed and not living our true calling, in putting aside the dreams of our six-year-old selves in favor of a to-do list and a should list instead of listening to our heart. The truth is that the refusal to expand our thinking keeps us stuck. So take a moment and look deep inside your heart for the answers. The answer to all your questions are kept inside of you. That is where the beautiful, glorious love resides. That is where the expansiveness is born. And that is where the answers to the revolution really lie. The revolution is the rebellion inside of you. That natural born rebel that's inside of you that wants to shift and fight and do something different. So my call to you today is to engage in graceful revolution by looking at each injustice as moments that touch all of us, by being willing to share your stories of personal struggle and personal survival and personal victory with other people. Talk about how what's happening directly affects your life. I'll close with further thoughts from Richard Rohr. We naively and erroneously think that fear, anger, and intimidation, threat and punishment are going to lead people to love. We cannot lead people to the highest level of motivation by teaching them the lowest. So as you leave here, I encourage you to think about all of the ways that you can make the difference And remember that it doesn't have to be everybody's way. It just has to be your way. Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa. I'm also proud to call Melissa a friend as well, and I can say that Chris and Melissa are two of the people that I went from a very difficult part of my life to being here today, partially thankful to people like them. So with that, I'd like to welcome Chris Crass. I met Chris in Whittier, was encouraged by a friend to go hear him speak, and found out that he was the one who was responsible for making all this trouble at Fullerton College when I first went back to school. It was amazing. And from that has bloomed a wonderful friendship. So Chris?
Good morning. It's wonderful to be in this blue district. That's something to feel. That's decades of organizing to create a blue wave in this area of the country. Does that feel good?
Yeah.
John Wayne country. Right wing, anti-communist, McCarthy era, Ronald Reagan country. I grew up 20 minutes from here. I live in Louisville, Kentucky now. People in California, they say, oh my gosh, you live in Kentucky. I say, oh my gosh, I grew up in California. I've never been called so many racist things. I've never seen so many grown men raise their hands in swastika Nazi salutes. I've never seen so much outward racist poison as I have in California than anywhere else in the country. And I always remind people, anywhere in the United States, when I say I live in Kentucky, anywhere but the South, people are like, oh my gosh, Kentucky? Mitch McConnell? I remind him, Malcolm X said, if you're talking about the South in the United States, you're talking about anything south of the Canadian border. I mean, we live in historic, intense times. Let's see if this thing's working. It's always a question about how you gain power, how you access resources. So sometimes you gotta go to a friend.
Chris, it just needs to be a little bit closer to your mouth.
And so these times, as was mentioned, these concentration camps, and if our friend who said that they have numbers, if in the next few minutes, if you'd be able to write down one of those phone numbers and bring it up. Okay, that's fine, but if anybody does have a phone number, that would be fantastic. It's all good. Just bring it up if you got one. But the concentration camps were folks who were interned as Japanese Americans, interned during World War II, holding protests right now about the concentration camps. Some of these concentration camps happening in former Japanese internment camps. Close to 40 Jewish activists just recently with the Never Again movement said, we refuse to allow these concentration camps to continue without us taking action, calling on Jewish community, calling on people of faith, calling on people of conscience to take action. Close to 30 Jewish activists just in the last day getting arrested doing civil disobedience against these concentration camps. But it's not just the horrors that we see. Adrienne Marie Brown, who's inspired by Octavia Butler, who we heard a reading from earlier. Adrienne Marie Brown, Afrofuturist writer, organizer, visionary, she says, yes, that with the election of Trump, it was a brutal assault against our collective humanity, and the horrors that we see, the horrors that are on our headlines 5 times a day, attacks on different communities. It's not that things have profoundly changed. It's that the veils of white supremacy, the veils of structural violence, the veils of injustice are coming down. And we're all seeing these horrors. And we all have a responsibility to rise. Does that sound true? See, I'm a Unitarian Universalist, but I'm kind of a Pentecostal Unitarian Universalist. And so I engage with people because we need to have a movement that has momentum, that has energy, that has fire. That has fire. because we have profound work in these historic times to prevent these abortion bans from becoming federal law, to end these concentration camps, but to also rise for justice. And as Unitarian Universalists, these are the times that our congregations and our faith were made for. Does that sound true? We need spiritual nourishment. We need connection of community. We need our relationships to hold us to celebrate the births of our babies, our beautiful babies. You know, and Baby Shark played for a second there in the opening, and I think that was the Spirit was asking us to remember our babies as we had this conversation. For our elders to celebrate moments of ceremony, of ritual, of anniversaries, and also to be a congregation that is joining with others to rise in these historic times. Of which direction are we moving as a country? Towards further concentration camps? Towards the green light to people who are attacking synagogues, black churches? A further green light to the alt-right, the neo-Nazis. Growing up in Southern California as a teenager, neo-Nazis were working to recruit me and other white kids. Actively. You could find meaning here. You could find purpose here. Speaking to the alienation, the depression, the despair that many young people feel. Thankfully, the socialist got me instead. A healthy anti-authoritarian anarchist socialism of the Southern California punk rock variety. And so coming into this work for justice, it was realizing that right-wing forces, forces of hate, forces that are mobilizing at the federal level to create these concentration camps, these concentration camps were the nightmare vision of neo-Nazis and racists a decade ago. Or 20 years ago in California with the Save Our State Prop 187 ballot measure. Y'all remember that? As a young person going to Fullerton College that Barbara mentioned, I started seeing these ads in the student newspapers all over California. Save our state from your tuitions are raising, the public schools are crumbling, the overcrowding of hospitals. It's all because of illegal aliens was the words that were being used then. Save our state from the invasion. Does that sound familiar? The invasion. The invasion from what used to be Mexico. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. If you've got a phone number, give me the phone number. It's all good. We'll talk. We'll talk. From an invasion. At Fullerton College, as Barbara mentioned, I was part of a multiracial coalition that at first was working around student fee hikes. Defund the prisons, fund the schools. That's a pretty good slogan, I think. But most people rallied around just the, you know, fund the schools, don't raise our fees, which was fine. We wanted mass support. We wanted large participation from the Fullerton College working class commuter college population. But when we started talking the next semester about ethnic studies, about hiring more faculty of color, about an expansion of black studies, an expansion of Chicano studies, an expansion of women's studies, a lot of that support disappeared, primarily the support amongst white people. White young people, but also white adults and, you know, professors and people in the administration that had previously supported us. I was really shocked. I couldn't believe that all these people that had supported us before weren't supporting us now. But leaders of color in this coalition were like, we're talking about racial justice now. And when white people hear ending racism, a lot of times white people have been trained to think that people of color are getting their humanity takes away white people's dignity, takes away white people's humanity, is something that's being taken from white people. Does that sound true? Because white supremacy is a system, it's a culture, it's in the laws of this country, it's in the Declaration of Independence asserting and the Constitution asserting humanity of enslaved Africans being less than. It's in the founding of how property and land in this country, it's the founding of rights and how rights were distributed or withheld. White supremacy is at the foundation of this country. but also a fight for democracy is at the heart of this country too. A fight to expand democracy, to expand rights, to expand dignity. But as a leader, as leaders of color were explaining to me, they said, you know what, for white people, white supremacy is whispering words into their ears over and over and over again, whether it's invasion from Mexico, or it's, oh, those black folks want more from you because they're trying to take from you. When they talk about rights, they're talking about taking from you. When they want these black studies classes, or they're hiring more faculty of color, that's going to be at the expense of you. And then the alt-right and the GOP and the neo-Nazis come in and say, all these folks talking about diversity, all these folks talking about inclusion, they're trying to make you feel bad about who you are. They're trying to make you feel ashamed for being white. And so as a young person, I was like, this is horrible. This is a nightmare. And leaders of color, they said, you need to figure out how to organize white people. And at the time, when you start thinking about racism, and you start thinking about white people, you think about the racists. And you're like, oh my gosh, I don't want to organize the white people. I want to hang out in the really super cool multicultural, multiracial student center and hang out with you all. I don't want to go out and talk to all these racists out here. And what I started to realize is that white folks, the vast majority of white folks, have white supremacy whispering in our ears as white people. Whether it is conservative GOP racism that is championing the person in the White House, or it's really good, polite, liberal racism of, well, if those folks would just, you know, kind of just take care of their own business, I'll help them out. I'll help them out. Or folks who, you know, and I love my white Unitarian Universalists. But sometimes as white Unitarian Universalists, there's more of a commitment to saying, but I'm a good person, than how can I really understand how racism operates today in this world? And how can I don't want good people. I want white people who are on fire for racial justice, white people who want to end racism, white people who want to bring these concentration camps to an end, white people who want to create beloved community, not out of guilt or shame, but out of an outrage for the horrors of injustice, and because we love the shared humanity of our people, and we want to come together in a way that we have never known. Does that sound true? To build beloved community in a way that we have never known. And so oftentimes in white communities, the most outspoken white people talking about race are the racists. In my family, it was my grandfather. He talked about race nonstop, every day. You ever hear this thing, white people don't like to talk about race? It makes them feel really uncomfortable. Especially good white people. They get real nervous. Especially Unitarian Universalist white people. They freak out. We need white folks who are committed to anti-racism, to racial justice, to develop our capacity to speak about race, to speak about racial justice, and not only to speak out against racism, but to speak from our hearts about how this is about regaining our humanity, reconnecting to our souls and our hearts, because white supremacy is spiritual impoverishment for white people. White supremacy works to politically and economically disenfranchise communities of color, and white supremacy works to turn the hearts and minds of white people into conscious or unconscious soldiers of that racism to dehumanize people of color. How many of y'all want to continue to be a part of this nightmare that is either creating death in communities of color and limiting the dreams and aspirations of children of color, or poisoning the hearts and minds of white children in the United States? How many of y'all want to continue to see this nightmare to continue? And so we have to come into our hearts and our souls to have some nourishment. Nourishment for this work. Because right now there are people all over the country who do not want to see this march towards fascism, of concentration camps, of this person being reelected for another 4 years, of a Supreme Court that takes away Roe v. Wade, of synagogues and black churches being attacked and vandalized on the regular. So we need nourishment, and our Unitarian Universalist congregations and faith need to be sources of profound spiritual, political nourishment for our hearts and for our minds in these times. Does that sound good? Yeah. All right, y'all. So we got to do a little bit of a revival to get some energy going on in this place to be able to do this. Because this work isn't going to come from just a bunch of folks who come together and say, yes, we do this on Sunday. And I know you all are engaged. And I know Barbara, who's an incredible leader for progressive work in Orange County, in the state of California, and I know there's folks in this room who are fired up too. Is that true?
Yep.
So we need to bring some fire into this room, some fire for justice, because I am tired. I am tired of in places like Orange County, in places like Kentucky, in places all over this country, that the loudest voices of white people, and this is a majority white denomination, majority white congregation, and sometimes Unitarian Universalists, they come up to me and they're real nervous. And they're like, we're real white. And I'll be like, oh, damn, I didn't know that. But I'll say, you know what? I'm deeply committed to the liberation of all of our people, and racial justice is at the center of that. And so, you're telling me you got white people? Because I love the white people, and I want more and more white people like myself to be a part of this work. So you're telling me you've got access to hundreds, if not thousands, through the combined networks of family and networks of white people who could be brought into social and racial justice and be part of building a beautiful, beloved community through movement for justice? You've got access to white people? That is awesome! Because we need to be coming together in powerful, profound ways. And so I am tired of the white voices and white communities who speak the most regularly, loudly, confidently about race to be the racists. I want communities like this that are multiracial, multi-faith, and majority white to be loud and courageous for racial justice. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Because we need to say, white supremacy, you cannot have us. The white supremacy of laws, the white supremacy of culture, the white supremacy that is whispering words of why the black children in my third graders' class are disproportionately disciplined and on a track to the prison system. If my third grader is not told and helped to understand the history of racism in this country, but also of racial justice, my third grader will be left to make sense of this all on his own, which means white supremacy helping to inform and teach my child. We have to say, white supremacy, you cannot have us. You cannot have communities of color. You cannot have white communities. You cannot have our congregation. Does that sound true?
Yes.
So I'm going to ask for four people to come on up here because we got to do some testifying. So I need four people to come up here and share from your heart. I want to end white supremacy because... I want to end white supremacy because. And so we got one, we need three more. We need three more. We got to be a solid group up here. I want to end white supremacy because. We got three, we got four. Let's give love to our people. So I want to end white supremacy because.
I want to end it because I have three kids. Everybody sees my kids. They come up here, they smile, they laugh, and they're beautiful, they're awesome. And I know based on me being 45 almost, it's rough, right? To be 45-year-old black man, it's a lot. The assumption that I'm not intelligent, the assumption that I'm criminal in some way, it's heartbreaking, and to have children to go through that and to know that. When they're 3 and my daughter's 6, they're the most beautiful ever. When they're 10, my boys especially, everybody's scared of them. And it breaks my heart because I see how sweet they are, I know how bright they are, I know how loving they are. And for them to be looked at as anything less than that is the most unfair thing that I can think of in this world. I drive an hour and a half every day each way to work in order to earn a living, to make sure, my wife works as well, she's right there, to make sure that we have all the opportunities and they have everything that they need to have to try to level the playing field the best as I can and to be out there. I almost like push my, hey guys, look how sweet these kids are. You see how we're nice. You're not to be scared of us. We're not.
Right.
I have a master's. I don't want people to look at me or my children in any kind of way outside of the people that we are. The right to judge us for who we are has been taken away by white supremacy, and I can't. It's hard to deal with.
That's right.
And that's why I want it gone.
That's right. Give love. Give love. You're so honest here. You're so honest here. I want to end white supremacy because.
Well, this is hard to say in front of Brian, But I was brought up in Compton, California. And at the time I was brought up, there was like horrible racism. We were about 50% black and white, and we had race wars. And my parents were wonderful people, but we as white people called black people niggers. Mm-hmm. We called Jews kikes.
Yeah.
And we felt very superior in every way. And long after that time went by, I began to realize that that was unfair, okay? And I understood in my heart, mind, that that was unfair. But I am 77 years old, and it's really only been since I've been coming to this church that in my heart I realize that every single human being on this earth is worth just as much as every other human being on this earth.
That's right. Let's pass it on over. That's right. I want to end white supremacy because...
I want to end white supremacy because I don't want to live in a world where it was illegal for my grandparents to get married.
Right.
Where my grandfather was not allowed to own property in this state or to buy a house in Orange County because he was Armenian. I don't want to live a life where people just assume, based on my snow white coloring, that I'm one of you. And so you can talk to me about, oh, well, you know the Jews. My sister is Jewish. She's a member of Temple Beth Tikva. Where my neighbors assume I'm 100% snowy white. So we can talk about, oh, well, you know, the new neighbors across the street, they've got all these different cars and they're, and the music's way too loud and it's all mariachi. And I'm like, I want to end white supremacy because I'm tired of wanting to throat punch people every single day.
That's right.
And I just gave myself a new manicure, and I'd like to keep it in good shape.
I want to end white supremacy because it freaking sucks. Hearing words like, I can't. Just hearing those words makes me fucking pissed. And it just really infuriates me, especially when my stepmother is sitting in my living room using that word just a few months ago. It's freaking disgusting. So, thank you.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to pass it right over here. Pass it right over here, and then we're going to give love to our people.
I want to end white supremacy because I'm a good person. But I'm also a wicked person. I suffer from an ethical bipolar disorder. My obligation to my community is to suppress all my evil impulses and to support all my good impulses.
That's right.
And I have to do that mindfully every day. Living in a fascist atmosphere doesn't help. It makes my own attempt at self-improvement that much more difficult. It's like I live in a country of enemies. So I don't want them to continue being my enemies. I want them to wise up and become my friends.
That's right. Good luck. And so for all of us to have a sense of, I want to end white supremacy because, and also I want racial justice for all because, I want to live my Unitarian Universalist faith because, and our Unitarian Universalist faith puts us into confrontation with white supremacy. It's not a question of, oh my gosh, my congregation, it's so white. My response is, how alive and on fire is your congregation for justice? How alive and on fire is your congregation for racial justice? Because yes, it's about demographics. Yes, it's about culture within our congregation. Yes, it's about all being welcome and included and loved and seen and dignified. And it's about changing policy, laws, elected officials. It's about creating a progressive governing majority, an agenda that transforms this country so that the inherent worth and dignity of all is in the law and the culture. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
And so we have to act from a profound sense of love that expands within our congregation and in our country as we work for justice in this world. Because I do not want white supremacy to raise my kids to see your kids as criminal, as less than. And I know that white supremacy is actively working to do that on every white child in this country today and tomorrow. And so it is not a question of whether or not you did something in the past. It's not a question of whether you yourself are not racist. The issue is not, am I or was I? The question is, what are we doing today to transform this country so that our values and our faith and our commitment to justice is alive culturally, politically, economically, socially, and in our congregation, in our community? With this last midterm, I was talking with my two white sons, 4 and 8 now. I was telling them about all these amazing people running for office. I was talking about all these progressive women of color in Kentucky, in Louisville, and around the country who were running for office and winning. My 8-year-old son, he said, are there any white men who are doing anything good? And I took a moment and I realized, I was like, you know what? My babies, my baby boys, my white boys, they need to see people like them who will look like them as men, also as leaders for social change. And I said, actually, you know what? Our state representative, Jeff Donahue, is a longtime labor leader who represents labor and economic justice at the state house in Kentucky, and he also fights for Black Lives Matter, for reproductive justice. He's a feminist, he's an anti-racist, and he's creating a culture of solidarity amongst working class people that is beautiful and vibrant. And he's a white guy who's doing this work alongside the people of color, alongside the women that we've been talking about, and as white guys, the alt-right does not get to have us. The GOP does not get to have us. Our home is in beloved community. Our home is in justice work. Our home is within our Unitarian Universalist faith that calls us into action, that calls us to be alive spiritually in these times. Because again, these are the times that we were made for. Does that sound true? Does that sound right?
Yes.
Let's be alive, my friends.
So I want to work for racial justice because in 1977, when I found myself living in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and went to a high school football game, and you know in the South, football is right there along with God and the Baptist Church, and the team lost by like 4 touchdowns. I stopped counting at the 4th touchdown. And on the field afterwards, all of a sudden I realized that they were saying it didn't matter, because we don't have any of those people on our team. So I want racial justice so that when winners win, you celebrate it, and when losers lose, they know they got their ass kicked and they should shut up. And realize that, you know what, win or lose, they both played a good game, and that's all that really should have mattered that night.
That's right. Thank you.
Offering is a vital way we show gratitude for our community. By giving to UUCF, we know that this community of caring will continue to do its good work in the world. We thank you for your generosity.
closing hymn, please rise in mind, body, or spirit and join us in singing Imagine.
Go now in peace.
Go now in peace. Go.